Hello, and welcome back to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. I am Brother Francisco Whitaker, Benedictine monk and deacon of St. Vincent Arch Abbey in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And I am joined by my dear friend, Lauren Charmer, who is a certified clinical social worker.
Licensed clinical social worker.
Okay, well, I don't know the lingo as well. Licensed clinical social worker from St. Louis, Missouri. She flew all the way out here just to do this podcast, right? There was no other reason to come out.
I think we made this exact same joke last time.
Did we? For those of you who have been following us for a while, Lauren was on an episode about a little over a year ago. Back in March, where we spoke about the union and the cross between mental health and spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of doing something somewhat similar.
Yeah, take on it.
One of the things that Lauren specializes in particularly is in addiction therapy and addiction mm-hmm. recovery. Mm-hmm. And one of the core roots of that, for those who choose to enter them, are 12-step programs. Yeah. And we were talking on the phone a little while ago, and she mentioned something about, you know, the 12 steps. And I said, well, you know that the rule of St. Benedict also has a 12-step program, the 12 steps of humility, which the chapter on humility, chapter 7, mm-hmm. is the longest in the whole rule. Mm-hmm. And at least my novice master believes, and most monks that I've talked to, believe that chapter 7 is really the heart mm-hmm. of the rule and really the spiritual core of mm-hmm. our entire Benedictine life. So we just kind of started sharing notes. I'm like, oh, well, this is step one here. This is step one here.
Yeah.
And there is a surprise amount of overlap.
Yeah. And I thought, let's do a podcast.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to do today. Yeah. Today we're going to talk about the 12 steps of humility and of recovery mm-hmm. and how both really are aimed towards the exact same thing mm-hmm. and how regardless of whether you or we are in need of being in a recovery program mm-hmm. or if you're a monk or not, mm-hmm. these are practices and steps we can all take to what's the end goal, really? Yeah. Draw close to God. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you wanted to start before we really got into things?
Right. I think the idea for this podcast came from, again, that desire for the integration of mental health and the spiritual life, of recovery and the spiritual life, and that all of these things, the growing in relationship with God, each other, with ourselves, and knowledge of God, each other, and ourselves, through something like 12-step programs, through something like the rule, which is obviously, you know, you guys are living out in your life and we know is applicable for all of us too. But I think it's important to remember that there are just so many tools at our disposal that I think we can hold on to them and kind of grip onto them and see what, just the Lord is saying to us through them. And so I think that's kind of the goal, is that none of these things are in isolation, right? Nothing happens in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the thing for us to remember, is that I think these can kind of seem like two like big sort of scary topics, like the 12 steps of humility and the 12 steps of recovering. What does that even mean? And so to really just kind of break it down and to hopefully make it applicable. And I know in my work, so like Brother Francisco said, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have my own private practice. And a good chunk of what I do is in working with people who are having mainly sexual addiction, but various forms of addiction, and always looking at, you know, I joke sometimes like with clients, like we're just going to throw it at the wall and see if it sticks, right? Which seems like sort of a crazy approach to the therapeutic process. But I think it's important to think, what can I glean from something like a 12-step program? What can I glean from something like the 12 steps of humility? Ultimately, what is it going to tell me about myself? What's it going to tell me about others? And what's it going to tell me about God?
And that's what the root of humility too is. This, the word humility comes from the Latin word humus, which means earth or grounded. Mm-hmm. And when we're grounded, it's, you know, accepting and knowing who I am, accepting mm-hmm. and knowing who you are, and accepting and knowing who God is. Mm-hmm.
And I think this, I don't know if it's Thomas Aquinas. I feel like people just attribute things to him that we actually say.
Yeah.
But there's this quote, the more you know, the more you love.
Mm.
And I think it's easy for us to see it, like with our friend. Like, the more I get to know you, the more I love you. The more I get to know someone else, the more I love them. But we often don't think that that's true of ourselves. We're afraid to know ourselves, and we're afraid to be introspective, especially maybe about more difficult things. And ultimately, growing love of self is growing in a rightly ordered view of how the Lord sees us and how other people see us. And so I think that's kind of the spirit with which we want to enter into this conversation is how, you know, where are we being invited to know ourselves better so we can love ourselves better, and not knowing ourselves for the sake of self-knowledge or purely that, or loving ourselves for the sake of self-love, just that, because none of these things are enough on their own. And I think that's crucial, and that will be something we kind of talk about throughout this whole episode. But yeah, what does it look like, and what's it going to take for us to know ourselves more? So,
and at least it takes 12 steps.
Yeah, at least 12. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. And a lifetime of redoing them.
Right, absolutely.
So awesome. Well, do you want to
get
dive
started?
In?
Sure. Look, we got all sorts of books and notes, extremely prepared.
We're super ready for this.
Yeah.
So the way we're going to kind of tackle this is to kind of go bing, bing, back and forth. So I'll read what the step is in from the step of humility, and then Lauren's going to bring in her expertise of the steps.
The rule of St. Benedict, that's what Cisco's reading from. And then I have, this is called the White Book. It's just the manual for SA, which is Sexaholics Anonymous. So that's what
And it's the same 12 steps also for AA or NA, 12 steps of recovery. So we're going to, go back and forth. So, all right. I also have, the rule of St. Benedict, this particular
he
translation.
He hasn't memorized, but he's just going to just wants to.
In humility to look like I don't know it. I do not have it. So this is the translation that came out in 1980. It's probably one of the most, one-to-one ratio translations. It uses a lot less paraphrasing than it did before. I do also have kind of a more modern translation pulled up on my computer to help, facilitate maybe some easier understanding. So step one, Benedict says, is that a man keeps the fear of God always before his eyes and never forgets it. Mm-hmm. And another way of, I guess, reading that is to have like a true, authentic respect for God. Mm-hmm. We hear the word fear, and especially in recovery language, fear is not a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. So fear here is not like a trepidation or a cowering or hiding, but rather a recognition of who God is and who I am. I am not God and you are. Mm-hmm. Truly admitting that I do not have all the answers, but rather God does, and actually acknowledging that.
Yeah. So. And so then the first step of the 12 steps is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol or whatever blank is, that our lives had become unmanageable. So that we admitted we were powerless. So even just those first words are, they talk about working the steps, working the program, going step by step. And it is, you look like the staircases of the steps, it's meant the second builds off the first and the third builds off the second, just as the rule does as well. And so I think, they talk about getting stuck on a step as if it's such a bad thing. And I'm sure it's the same for you guys and for all of us in trying to grow in humility. And actually, I try to encourage people that being stuck somewhere, I mean, it can be a bad thing if it's breeding complacency it's, too cyclical there. But I think being stuck just means there's more of an opportunity there. And, that there's more depth and more places to be healed and seen. And I think I wanted to say this at the beginning, sorry, Cisco, that my work as a clinician, I work with individuals. And then oftentimes they will then also go to a 12-step group. And so this is oftentimes something that people do kind of in conjunction.
Yes.
That's just, I think, helpful for people that are maybe not as familiar with that. And I think something that you said, which I think relates to the powerlessness and even just admitting that, the talk about the fear of God, I think that's, like you said, that we think of fear as a cowering, or we think of if we're afraid of something, we're weak.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think a rightly ordered fear of God is a very good thing. And sometimes I think even just when we look at, the obligations of the Christian life and or of your life as a monk, we should have some fear if we don't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
there should be this desire to do it. And so I think, we can, I don't want to do anything out of fear. That's what we always say. I don't want to speak out of fear. I don't do this out of fear, which there's something to be said for that. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think when it comes to the normal Christian life, when it comes to following Jesus or when it comes to obligations that come up in our relationships, bring back a healthy fear of God or a healthy fear of disappointing others, or just this, because I think it can kind of then be the engine that can drive us towards good things. Again, we're not doing things out of fear, but with I think it can help us have a rightly ordered view of things.
Yeah, no, and I think that's kind of speaks to, so you're kind of speaking from, mm-hmm. you know, your side to mine, I think, mm-hmm. speak from the humility into the recovery, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is that, like, a fear, like, the negative fear, mm-hmm. as regards to, you're talking about power, powerlessness, mm-hmm. is, I'm afraid that I don't have enough power here, yeah. right? And yeah. so, yeah. what is our general, like, reaction when we mm-hmm. feel like we don't have the power over a situation mm-hmm. or control is to try to assert it yeah. with more, you know, yeah. like, more gusto, more mm-hmm. anger, more whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rather, a rightly ordered kind of fear mm-hmm. is to say, like, I guess I'm just afraid I just don't have the power here. Yeah, like, right. I can't do it. And rather than, like, try to assert, it's like, well, yeah, I just have to recognize. I think healthy fear is more recognition.
Absolutely.
Than right. it is kind of a gut-moving reaction.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it can also be taken too far.
Very much so.
And I think with everything we're saying, anything taken to its extreme isn't good either.
Yeah.
And so there's a nuance there that I think is really important that I think we'll kind of keep getting into. And just that, yeah, that powerlessness, again, there's a lot of fear around it, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's yeah. this, because it's terrifying, you know, any situation of powerlessness, because it realizes that we're not in control. And yet, kind of like with what you were talking about there too, it actually is the thing that brings the most amount of freedom.
Yeah.
The remembering that we're powerless. And that's that constant line, remember that you're powerless.
And that's, I love that you said remember, because Benedict finishes, you know, always have fear before your God, before fear of God, before your eyes, and never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. like we constantly remembering mm-hmm. and recognizing mm-hmm. our powerlessness, mm-hmm. which then connects to constantly remembering and never forgetting who God is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, oh, wait, he has the power, right? Mm-hmm. God, I'm powerless, but I need your power. Mm-hmm. And I need your power.
Yeah, and you know, the more we realize, like, that in ourselves, then the more we can, I think, experience, receive, be transformed by the power of God.
And St. Paul speaks about in 2 Corinthians, mm-hmm. in God's power, Jesus says to him, my power
mm-hmm.
is made most perfect in your weakness.
You know? Fun fact about that quote, when Cisco ran a marathon this fall, Brother Bosco made him a sign, and it said that.
Yeah.
Power made perfect in weakness.
Because that's my favorite scripture verse. Mm-hmm. I love.
And you were feeling pretty weak.
I was feeling mega weak. Broken down more than I'd ever felt physically broken down.
You're feeling powerless.
Oh, gosh. I had some real fear, like, I'm going to die, you know?
Yeah,
so, you
did great. You did great.
Awesome. Want to go on to
yeah.
step two? All right. Wow, this is a... Benedict talks goes through step one. It's funny how he doesn't give an equal breakdown.
Step one is so long.
He talks a right. while here. Yeah. So, all right. So, the second step of humility is that a man loves not his own will, nor takes pleasure in the satisfaction of his own desires, rather imitates by his actions the Lord, saying, I came not to do my own will, but the will of the one who sent me.
Mm-hmm.
Or in other words, not a love of self, mm-hmm. self-driven ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Step two here is, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And the word I love most in this is the word restore. Mm-hmm. And what is it? And I think to be in recovery is a constant experience of restoration. To be living a life of humility is to constantly being restored back to ourselves
who
and back
are.
To our true
yeah.
selves. Mm. And so I think that that's what both of these really speak to, is what needs to be restored.
Yeah, our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity, right? Yeah. The word human also comes from earth,
yeah.
ground, because out of, God created mm-hmm. Adam out of the dust of the earth. Mm-hmm. So that human and humility actually come from the same root.
Right.
So to be humble is actually
does
to just
hummus
be...
Does come from the same root?
I think it might. Actually, I don't know.
I think, like, the ground.
A humor does, I know. And to have, like, healthy humor is to kind of,
yeah.
like, accept our yeah. humanity.
Yes, absolutely.
And so to be humble is to really just accept who
be
we are.
Yourself. Yeah.
Saint, not saint, I would love if he was a saint. C.S. Lewis says, humility is not thinking less of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it is thinking of yourself less.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, less often.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of what Benedict is saying here, right? Not to come to do my own will, not to think of me,
mm-hmm.
rather the will of mm-hmm. the one who sent me, which
mm-hmm.
is often revealed to us through other people.
Mm-hmm.
And to connect it with step two for
mm-hmm.
you, restore us to sanity. That means that there is some part, there's an aspect of addiction that is created in insanity in our lives.
Right.
And what is the kind of the classic definition of insanity? To do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting some different result.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what our self-will causes. Self-will run riot I will try to do whatever this is that I think will fulfill me, and this time around, it will actually do what it wants.
And this time it's going to work.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And that is because I'm trying to serve myself. Rather, serving Christ and doing His will, oh, wow, like, that keeps me sane. That actually does fulfill me.
Right. And I think for anyone who's on a recovery journey, especially if they're working the steps, there is this moment of realization that comes from both the powerlessness, but this moment of this thing that has always worked, and I use the word worked with air quotes because it's obviously not working, this thing that has always worked no longer is and no longer satisfies. And that's, and we know this is true of so many things that, you know, whether it's, you know, on a smaller level, larger level, that the things we think will satisfy us, when they don't and we're left disappointing, and then we think, oh, if I just do it again, then that'll fix it, or that'll, you know, give me that high that I'm looking for. And obviously there is like actual like things happening in our brain with our brain chemistry. And that's a whole other wild podcast, episode, but to just remember, what you just said, that this is what is being restored, is the idea, okay, this thing that always worked no longer does, and I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not going to want to do it or not going to, you know, and these things take a long time, and recovery is a long journey, just like humility is a long journey, a lifetime. But I think there's a moment for people, I think people in recovery would say that there's a moment where they realize, okay, this thing that's always worked no longer works. I am experiencing my powerlessness, and that glimmer of hope of, and I don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, just even the possibility of that. And I think what you described there with the second step is that's, you know, it says, nor takes pleasure in the satisfaction of his desires, right? So no longer taking pleasure in the thing that always worked, right?
Yeah.
But in doing the will of God.
And he finishes here, says, we similarly read, and I don't actually know what he's referring to, because there's no, footnote here.
Probably Thomas Aquinas.
Well, since he predated him by about 600-700 years, maybe not.
As that came out, prophetic. I thought, oh, I'm getting my years mixed up.
But he says,
I struggle with centuries.
It's all right. He says, consent merits punishment. Constraint wins a crown. Mm. And I just want, like, that second half, constraint wins a crown. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the crown of to be sane, right? To, like, really be who I am through and through, and to be happy with that.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the restoration of sanity.
Yeah. I like that.
That. And I think, which requires constraint. And again, we don't want to be constrained, because we want to be able to do whatever we want. This is, you know, or we've all, you know, you see a little kid that wants something, and it's like, no, you can't have ice cream at 7 a.m. because this is, like, you need to have some constraint so then you're not sick later in the night. Although, I'll learn to probably give ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, I would give my nieces and nephews cake and ice cream whenever
I just
they
gave, we were all just swimming in the pool, and I just gave them all lollipops. Here you go.
Here you go, right now.
I gotta leave.
That's the best move. I love doing that. It's like, you guys want to go do something fun? Yeah. We're right about to do it. And like, oh, well, your mom. It's your mom. I would let you do it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'd give you ice cream. Your mom.
Oh, I made sure that they all had a lollipop.
Well, I would do that too, you know.
Yeah, but so that constraint is not a bad thing. And I think, just like the moral law is not a bad thing, that we don't like these being told what to do, or these fences around us. But, you know, ultimately, that when that's what's going to keep us safe. And I think that's the restoration to sanity is a restoration to safety. And is ultimately making us more of who we were created to be.
And free.
Which, and more human, yeah.
We're going to definitely come back to freedom
absolutely.
A lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, okay, awesome. The third step of humility is that, and Benedict says man, because he's writing monk, rule to monks, right? But you could just, that a person submit to their superior in all obedience for the love of God, imitating the Lord. And the third step of recovery.
Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I think, to talk about the word submit.
Yeah, we say that. Yeah.
Do you want to tell them? Like the under the, isn't it? Like under the
under mission. The mission. Yeah. Okay. So the word submission.
I haven't studied Latin and Greek and whatever other, you know, these really smart seminarians have. So
the word submission That's like such a, given such a negative connotation, right? Oh, don't, you know, don't be submissive, whatever. The word submissive comes from submissio, which is just like sub, which means under, and missio means mission. Mm-hmm. So under the mission of. So we hear in Ephesians, Paul say, wives, be subordinate, mm-hmm. be submissive to your husbands. Mm-hmm. People go, So just be under this mission. Basically, don't have two separate missions in your marriage. Yeah. So you should have one mission, which is to bring each other and your children to heaven. Mm-hmm. So here, be submissive to God. Be under the same, well, submissive to your superiors. Be under the same mission as your superior.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this starts made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And I think it's important to say here, this is, I think some Catholics and, or even Christians can struggle with 12 steps, even though it is filled with people who love God and desire to serve him and has, you know, prayers that rings, all those things. So, but people can say, well, as we understood him, I think people can have a kind of critical view of 12 step programs because it's not explicitly Christian or like evangelical in nature, which again, as we talked about in the last podcast, it's important also to have some separation of these things. But I think that just to say that, you know, if we were going to address like common misconceptions about 12 step and recovery programs, is that it doesn't value God, which again, anyone who's been in any sort of 12 step program would know that that's not true. And also, as we understood him, what that's telling someone is, okay, where are you at? And how can I see where you are at to help you encounter the God who made you and loved you? Like, and that's, obviously a crucial part of any journey. And how can I see where, acknowledge how you've made a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God? And I love that phrase, the care of God, right? Because it's, I think a lot of times what's lost in any sort of addiction journey is a feeling of being cared for. And oftentimes, it's because there's a moment in someone's life where they were not properly cared for.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then the addictive behavior then becomes the thing, the place where they feel the most cared. Mm. And so I think often, again, it's this... I was just telling someone last night that one of the greatest privileges of my life as a clinician, and I've done a lot of formation work of priests and religious as well over the years, and is to be the one who tells them, hopefully not for the first time, but a lot of times for the first time, that, you know, your first exposure to porn, sex, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, like, was not your fault, right? Like, someone was not properly caring for you, or you were not properly caring for yourselves, and that's where then this addictive behavior began. And so, what does it mean to be cared for? Not just the care of God, but cared for by other people. It means to be under the same mission.
The mission that God always had for us, that we just... either lost, never understood, and now finally truly submitting and saying, all right, like, my own self will got me nowhere. You know?
Right.
My self reliance got me where I was here. Right. So I will, in humility, say, all right, your mission, not my own. Right. And that's what he says, imitate Christ, when he said, became obedient, even to the point of death, right? The death of the self.
Yeah.
Benedict talks about how, like, the greatest issue or, like, the greatest hurdle in truly becoming the monk God calls us to is our self-will. And I think it sounds, you know, in recovery, the care of God is the care of God almost seems to fight against that self-will because, who could I trust? Like, I seem to be at least the best option to care for myself, even if I don't care myself well, at least I may be the best option. It's like, no, it's got to be God.
Right. And I think what we just witnessed yesterday.
So the real reason Lauren's here, not just to do this podcast, is one of my dear monastic brothers here, Brother Finbar, made his solemn profession, final profession. So leave a comment below. Congratulations, Brother Finbar. Yes. He's awesome.
And the three others, of course.
Yes, not just him. There were actually three others. Brother Bede, Brother Robin, and Brother Jose. All great. Also, Brother Jose's been on the podcast, if you remember.
So Brother Finbar.
So many people. This is great.
But Brother Finbar is one of my best friends
long,
from college.
Long-time best. That's how we got to know each other, was through Brother Finbar.
So he made his solemn profession yesterday, and, I mean, I've known him for a long time, and I've never seen him happier than I saw him last night. So what the world would say is what you need. You need self-reliance. You need power. You need all of these things. you know, he made these solemnly professed these promises to his abbot. He submitted to his legitimate superior, his abbot. And yeah, I think he would say, and he did say, and I have no problem speaking for him, in this situation, that he is experiencing like a freedom and a peace and a joy that he's never had before. Mm.
Yeah, and what counter that would sound to anyone, you know, so, especially someone who's like in the depths of an addiction that hasn't been able to work any kind of step. Like that doesn't sound like that makes sense.
No.
And that's where you said step two, insanity, right? That's kind of the insane part of thinking.
Submission.
And solemn vows is such a great example of that because right before they make their vows, just like at an ordination, they lie prostrate completely on the floor, which is such a submissive and vulnerable position.
Right.
If you're lying on the floor face down, you have no idea if kind of someone's going to sneak up on you and attack you, right?
Right.
That is the most insane looking position to be in. Yet it is actually the sanest because it is saying, "All right, God, this is my way of showing I'm letting you take care of everything here."
And you've done it twice now.
In solemn vows and in diaconate ordination. And I will say, like, what a powerful experience that is.
Absolutely. And it's to see, it's a wild thing to be able to witness to. And I, you know, I'm always like, are they falling asleep?
More awake in my ordination probably at that moment than like any other point.
And it's just such a beautiful, again, because what the world says you need, it's just so in contrast to it, which makes the witness and the testimony all the greater, for sure.
Awesome. All right, we still have a lot of steps to go. So this is great. We're not rushing, though. All right, so the fourth step of humility is that in obedience, under difficult, unfavorable, I'll just summarize this basically, obedience at all times, especially in difficult moments.
And step number four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I think this is the one that people hear it and they're like,
Can you explain a little bit more? What does that mean? What does that look like?
What does it mean to make, you know, just even hearing these words, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves? That by this point in a recovery journey, which again is a journey and it has ups and downs as anything in life does, that someone's got to a point where they're, okay, I can see that I'm powerless. And again, you don't have to do one step perfectly to be able to get to the next, but there has to be a rightly ordered understanding of it. I think to be able to do to get to the next one, at least in its fullest measure, if that makes sense. But this idea of made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I've admitted that I'm powerless. I've turned my life and my care over to God. I know that what I am doing is not working. And also, I know that I didn't just get here plop down out of nowhere. So what does it look like? What would it take for me to look back at my life, my choices, my decisions, and, you know, that we'll get later about how it affects, how it did affect other people, etc. But what does it look like for me to actually know myself and to look at not just where I'm at now? Like, we can't know where we're going unless we know where we are now and where we've been. And so I think that's really what step four is about, is this, and even these words, a searching and fearless moral inventory. And I think the idea of fearless, it means like having the courage to actually do this thing well. To really to look into ourselves and to look into maybe these parts of our stories and these parts of our hearts that have caused us the most shame, the most pain, the most regret, the most, you know, the most agonizing parts of our life. And again, you read it and it seems crazy. Like, why would I do that? But again, the more you know yourself, the more you love yourself. And we've all had the experience of, you know, even just like being in confession or sharing something hard with someone else. And then you're so afraid to tell someone, you're so afraid to even examine yourself enough to be able to get to that point. And then what happens when you do? I'm really glad I said that. I'm really glad I did that. And I think most, I don't know, I guess I would never say most people. I think a lot of people would say step four is ends up being one of their favorites. Because it becomes this, okay, I'm not hiding anymore.
There are no more secrets.
And it's, you know, it makes me think of the woman at the well. Like, come see this man who told me everything I've ever done.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Yeah. And this idea of, you know, she was hiding and kind of cowering in shame. And I love, because we talked about her, I think, on the last podcast too. Well, the woman at the well and the story of it. But that's the, you know, again, a rightly ordered relationship with ourselves, with each other, and with God is, come know me, come know these parts of me that are hard or scary. And I think that that's, yeah, I think just the bedrock of any honest, humble interaction, is that, that rightly ordered knowledge of self.
And that, you know, as far as step four of humility, obedience, especially in difficult times, like that, doing that, it's incredibly difficult. To really be truly honest with ourselves, right? And courageous enough to admit, this is what I've done. These are the, you know, the ways in which I've acted shamefully in the past. These are the people that I like hate, resent, whatever. These are the attitudes that I've had that have run my life. That we don't want to admit those things. And if we do, it's like, okay, I can, like, you know, acknowledge, move on. Like, that's just rather like a searching and fearless. Searching means if you get an answer, you don't just settle for that either. You know, you got to press deeper. And obedience means you don't let up. You got to keep on pushing.
And I think what it could also do, Brother Francisco, is it can show us, maybe these are all these parts of, like, my life and my heart and my story that have been really hard, but there also are moments of joy in that too. And that, and moments of being protected and preserved, and I don't know, maybe people in recovery would say that's kind of a rose-colored glasses way of looking at it, but I do think I've seen that. And I think we know too, like, when we can share something hard to then, when we present it to someone else, then they can show us and kind of help us take out the good pieces of it too. Because, you know, most addictive behavior, if not all, is rooted in a desire to be known, loved, seen, and cared for. And so, and again, it comes out backwards in addiction. But then once you have admitted it, you've seen it in yourself, not only can those things be filled properly, but also to be able to see in ourselves where maybe we've been preserved. And it, the searching and fearless, I think it's a song like the search me, O Lord. And
search me, Lord, and know my heart.
And I had a situation this spring where I said to Brother Francisco, I said, can you, like, presented something to him that was happening in my life. And I was like, can you just, like, weed through this with me? And just, like, this is what I think, but I want someone else to look at it too, to not only hold myself accountable, and but also ultimately to help me have a more rightly ordered view of of God and of his will for my life. And of and I think that's obviously a beautiful part about friendship and relationship, not just God but with other people, is like we get to say, you know, help, can you just help me like look at this? And that's humility.
Absolutely. The humility of working through anything like that. And I think I want to jump to five, actually, because I think there's actually a better connection here, too. So for Benedict, then, let's see, here we go. So the fifth step of humility is that a person does not, or a man does not conceal from his abbot, or, you know, if this is more translatable to anyone, that a person does not conceal from another, a close friend maybe, or from another, any sinful thoughts, ways of the heart, wrongs committed in secret, and rather confesses them humbly, or just simply transparency. This is a great word.
And step five here is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs.
Which, so when we were going over these together, like in our conversation, this one was just like, wow, that one overlaps
so perfect.
So well. To the, actually, even the point, this was really cool. We just finished a retreat in the monastery this week. We had a diocesan priest, actually, who teaches at Theological Institute, Theological College, something out in Chicago. And he was going over, you know, different parts of the rule. And when he was focusing on humility, when he came to step five, he said, actually, there is so much overlap with the 12 steps of recovery in this moment. I was like, well, we're going to do a podcast on that. So I was like trying to jot down a bunch of notes of what he was saying. And it struck me just how much overlap there is here. Because Benedict says, humbly confess, right? Any wrongdoings. And if you're confessing it to another, there's that understanding that you're also confessing it before God. And that it's, you're also admitting it to yourself. And that is verbatim.
Absolutely.
What your step five is saying.
Absolutely. Admit it to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And I think, again, this is not to be like petty or overly like self-intrusive, which I think people can, again, on private lack of humility, like, oh, I don't want to dwell on that. Or that, people say that a lot, like, oh, I don't want to fix it on that. Sure. But you can't heal from something that's never been brought to the light. And so, yeah, there can be a part where I think people will get stuck here on five, sure, yeah. right? Because it becomes this, like a self-flagellation almost of, you know, admitting the exact nature of our wrongs. But I think, again, and this is one of the things I think that could be most easily kind of brought out just like in day-to-day life, like admitting to God, to ourselves and others, the exact nature of our wrongs. And these aren't just like majorly addictive behaviors, but even just like,
yeah,
things happening like in between friends or, you know, misunderstandings or just keeping that short account.
Yeah.
Too, I think, is really
any places where we find that our desire is to, you know, make ourselves the center of attention, mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, places that we notice like impatience, mm-hmm, resentments, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, frustrations, to speak those out before, mm-hmm, they grow.
Yeah.
And that's something that's become really important to me recently. Yeah. It's just like, let's not wait until, mm-hmm, I would think like, oh, well, I'm just not going to say anything and like, I'll just let it go.
Right.
That,
right.
I at least for me, that rarely works. It just right. usually right. makes like
right.
something staying in the dark, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bacteria in the dark grows mm-hmm. into, you know, mm-hmm. it grows and grows and grows and grows. And then mm-hmm. now you have a colony mm-hmm. right, of things. Mm-hmm. Rather, it was just one thing to begin mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. And at least from whether a monastic or even just like a religious Catholic's perspective, this is just really the sacrament of confession mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And we think about those sins that we don't want to bring to the light, right? It's fine. It's so shameful, so difficult to confess, right? Oh, I don't want to dwell on that. I don't want to think about that. Mm-hmm. And at least with my spiritual director, what happens when I confess them? I'm received in a way I would never have expected, right? I'm received in a way I don't receive myself. Mm-hmm. And that's why
it's the most rightly ordered.
Yeah. And to be loved in that place, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's also why it seems to me why it would be so central mm-hmm. not to just admit to yourselves and to God, mm-hmm. rather to another human person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because let them incarnationally
yeah.
react
very sacramental.
In a way that says, nothing you could say
yeah,
will change the way yeah. that I feel about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think what you were just saying about resentments is, and we've talked about this a ton, like, what does it mean to move, constantly be moving the opposite sphere of resentment?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's resentment, nothing good happens. Like, nothing good. And we even had a conversation a few months ago where I was frustrated about something, but then you were also frustrated about something, and it just, and then finally we said it out loud, and it was.
It's like, oh.
We should have done that. Well, you know,
yep.
before, which I think is a really healthy thing to do in relationships and in friendships is to, like, even I found myself, I was on the phone with my mom recently and I hung up quick and then I called back. I was like, I just didn't like my tone when I hung up. Like, I just, yeah, not a huge deal,
yeah.
but like, I don't need to be living in that space. Right. And just, yeah. and the shorter, the quicker you bring it to the light, you know, the less it has time to kind of dwell and grow.
And what a relief
yeah.
it brings yeah. too. And right. as far as humility,
yeah.
it seems so we build up those things so much, like, oh, I couldn't do that because mm-hmm. It sounds scary.
Yeah.
Really, also the underlying, at least a lot for me, is the underlying thing is like, oh, like, I don't want to like mm-hmm. be seen as dumb or insecure mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. like an overthinker, mm-hmm. a catastrophizer. Mm-hmm. People don't really think that.
Yeah.
If you just say it, just say it.
Say it aloud.
Right. So, yeah, and I think a big one for me has been, like, just admitting insecurities, like, right away, mm-hmm. out loud. Mm-hmm. So freeing.
Yeah.
So freeing.
Yeah.
And it's really humbling. It's mm-hmm. super humbling to mm-hmm. say, like, hey, I'm really insecure about this mm-hmm. in my relationship here, or mm-hmm. about how I think you feel about me, mm-hmm. or what I look like, mm-hmm. in so many different ways,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
not just physically, just whatever.
Sure.
And the thing that we are afraid of is always way less than just the fear we create for ourselves yeah, about it.
Absolutely. And this, I'm laughing because this modern translation, the modern translation is be transparent. This
we love transparency.
And
that's something we say to each other all the time.
It's almost a joke. And yeah, all our friends, like, we talk about this phrase, radical transparency.
All the time.
But I think it's so good. Like, what do you think it means to be radically transparent?
To hold nothing back.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's, and this is not just about, like, deep, dark, scary things, although that, it's certainly there too, mm-hmm. but about even just the, like, you know, radical transparency, like, I'm really tired right now. Like, yep. I cannot engage in this in the way that I want to, so I'm going to go. Or, like, radical transparency, like, you do not have, like, my full attention right now, and so I need to take care of this and then come back to all these things. It's just, it's keeping ourselves honest and accountable, which is exactly, you know, the goal, the fruit of admitting to God, ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Again, it's not self-flagellation. It's self-knowledge to be able to actually grow in a place of self-love. And what happens when we admit, so the, you know, exact nature of our wrongs, if we, you know, even want to, like, the imagery of, like, you're pulling a weed out, right? That has, and you can't just cut it off at the top, or you got to pull it out at the roots. Mm-hmm. And then what happens, like, then there's finally a space there for, like, real good something life to come.
To grow. Wow. I like that. I've done, so there's a alcohol and drug recovery center. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour from here.
Okay.
And I've gone there a few times to just, because I felt called at times and minutes to do ministry, mm-hmm. particularly with, like, inmates and with addicts, and just be there. You know, I don't have an answer for them, but they just, it's really helpful to have someone just attention. Listen, you know, just to give them. And I know a core tenet in recovery is rigorous honesty. Mm-hmm. And that's just radical transparency, rigorous honesty. Yeah, just like, absolutely. It's just a total overlap. And we cannot, I believe, be humble if we're not honest.
Right. Yeah, and I think, like, that, even that phrase, rigorous honesty, like, what is rigor, like, you think about, like, say, rigorous exercise, right? Like, it's really hard, and it drains you, and it's exhausting, but what ultimately happens, it, like, it's the thing that makes you healthier, that makes you healthier and stronger. And again, I think what all of these things are supposed to do, and I think especially step five, is it frees us up. It frees space in our mind.
So much freedom.
Frees up space in our heart, and that allows us to live more freely. So it's not like, you know, in conversations with each other or elsewhere, we're constantly going around, you know, from this, like, really deep, dark place saying these things, right? And sometimes you just say it and forget it. Sometimes you need to say it again. Or sometimes there's moments where it's like, oh, I can't believe that this is coming up again, or that this insecurity is coming up again, or that I need to, you know, say this, whatever. But as we're growing in knowledge of ourselves, then able to more easily kind of say it and let it go.
Yeah.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. I think that's a period on step five.
Yeah.
Step six is that a monk is content with the lowest and most menial treatment, or to be content with lonely and menial tasks or jobs.
Number six here, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, it's funny. I thought that these were maybe the two that were not as, but then hearing you just say that again, I'm like, no, they are really, like, it all actually is. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And I think, like, what does it mean to have, like, a defect of character removed? It's acknowledging that this thing we've been doing hasn't been working, that it's caused harm to ourselves and others. And now, because I'm powerless, I'm actually at a place for the first time in my life that someone else, God, with the help of other people, can come. And a lot of times can come and remove it. And an important thing to note, that to really work any 12-step program is to have a sponsor, is to have some sort of mentor, some sort of person that is there to you. And oftentimes it's the sponsor that's the person that's, I think it always is the person that's working the steps with an individual and is kind of on the receiving end of all of these things triage, first line of defense, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, which is, just an important part of that radical transparency and that rigorous honesty. But to say, okay, these are defects that have, negatively impacted myself and others, and now for the first time, I'm ready for them to be gone. And I think there's a comfort that comes in addictive behavior that is part of, which I think we can all kind of see in various things, that we obviously don't want to be uncomfortable, but we're also afraid we're no longer going to be cared for if we're not engaging in this. And I think what this is saying, what step six is saying, is that, you know, to remove these defects of character is actually going to make way for something else. Just like, you know, what you said about the rule, you know, doing those more humble, menial things is then what also allows and makes way for greater things too.
Could you speak into, like, what, like, that means by defects of character? Because I think, because it doesn't say, humbly ask God to remove my addiction, which I think, it from someone standing on the outside, that might be like, why wouldn't you just ask God to take that away? Because isn't that what you got in, into here? So why, if you just don't have that, then you're fine.
Right.
Rather, since there's actually been no, except since step one, really, nothing explicitly said about the addiction itself, right? It's all these other things.
Yeah, because I think the problem is not the problem. I think that's the, you know, that YouTube video, it's not about the nail.
I don't know if I know that one. Okay, sorry.
A little bit older than Cisco. That's fine. I'm sure there are people. Drop a comment if you know what I'm talking about, because I think it's this very funny. We'll watch it later. But this, the addictive behavior, it's like the fruit, not the root, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah,
yeah. Okay. The it's the defects that then are the thing that cause the addictive behavior. And so whatever that those defects of character are, they're the thing that then, because those occurred or because those happened. And I think it's not just defects like, you know, these are all the reasons why I'm bad and so then I'm doing this. It's also like these things that have happened to us that then have caused us to engage in unhealthy coping mechanisms or have caused us to react out of trauma or to react out of, you know, we've talked about attachment, all of those things. But yeah, it gets to the point of that it's not, because once those defects are removed, then that's, you know, kind of, again, makes the space for actual growth to happen, but also can kind of shine the light on what's, I'm trying to think what the word for like the opposite of a defect would be, like an asset.
Asset,
right.
Think, yeah, yeah.
So then to see, okay, what are, now that these defects have been revealed, these behaviors, inclinations, experiences that have caused me to engage in this problematic behavior, that then also, what are the other things? What are the assets? What are the things that I can be doing? Not to like replace the behavior, because we're trying to replace an addictive behavior is never going to work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the insanity. That's the trying to just get into another addiction. That's why there's oftentimes so many comorbidities with different types of addictive behaviors.
They really come alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's figuring out what the defects is. What are the root things? What are the root causes in me that are causing me then to engage in these problematic behaviors?
And that makes sense. And you know, since you know God created us good. Mm-hmm. That in a sense, like what have become defects, I would think began to be created as assets, just assets we took too far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So in the asset of being like strong, independent, mm-hmm. like a good leader, mm-hmm. can be taken to the defect of being controlling and manipulative. Mm-hmm. The asset of being like a good speaker, mm-hmm. or like, you know, a good presenter, mm-hmm. can then lead to the defect of being judgmental of
Absolutely.
Everyone else because they
Absolutely.
Don't do things right.
Right.
And then it's to say, okay, well, how I have used this mm-hmm. is the mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. So we need to go down to mm-hmm. searching mm-hmm. how this has been corrupted mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. and just really the root, again, of our self-will is really what just corrupts so much of this. And then how our desire to try to fix them mm-hmm. or to like, or whatever, is then why the addiction blossomed poorly,
exactly.
right? So, and just to, like, connect it with step six, you know, to be content with lowly and menial jobs or tasks, what's the phrasing Benedict used? I would wonder if, you know, use this for people to kind of get a framework or understanding, but that if we truly got to a point where, mm-hmm. you know, because of our humility and because of our mm-hmm. desire and our mm-hmm. faith, mm-hmm. God is truly beginning to remove these defects, mm-hmm. we won't see these things as menial. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see a task that I don't like as and therefore it's menial, it's draining, mm-hmm. it's annoying to me, mm-hmm. because of a defect.
Right, absolutely.
I have a view of, I always grew
a distorted
up
view.
Hating
yeah.
raking leaves.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like it made no sense to me. You know, no one ever did it for so long. It's just because we want to make our yard look good, mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. And because the defect is laziness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that I thought I knew better than my dad, mm-hmm, because it mm-hmm. didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I clearly am right. You're wrong. This mm-hmm, is dumb. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, no, if that, you know, laziness, procrastination, that I think I'm better than you, mm-hmm, or I know better than you, is removed, this isn't a menial task anymore.
No.
This is something I'm being asked to do, mm-hmm, and I don't look mm-hmm, at it negatively.
Mm-hmm. And I think the root of a lot of addiction and addictive behaviors, and I think something that a lot of people in recovery struggle with, is manipulation. And you know, where does manipulation come from? A desire for control. And why did that happen? Because there was an experience where we were not cared for, and there was a disordered love. Disordered intimacy. And that's, you know, in working with people struggling with sexual addiction or problematic sexual behaviors, to get them to see, like, the root of why you started doing this is because you had a desire for intimacy that was not being filled, right? Mm-hmm. And so then because it was, or maybe you were manipulated, or, you know, a number of these things that could kind of be the root of that. So, like, the defect of manipulation, which is a big one for a lot of people, then can become more ordered towards, like, true intimacy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, manipulation, even the word manipulation, the first beginning of it comes from manus in Latin, which means hands.
Just you,
like,
are really
to have, like, your hands in everything.
Yeah,
right. And, like, hands off and just, like, kind of letting things happen.
Right.
That's truly, like, being free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's this realization, okay, if I'm no longer manipulating, then I'm no longer in control.
Yeah.
And that's can be really scary. And I think especially in any sort of recovery process, the realization of the amount of times that manipulation has been, like, the baseline.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think can be one of the toughest defects for people to be kind of on the other side of, or, like, replace or even believe that there could be an asset. Because it's like, no, I'm always going to manipulate people.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, like, a more properly ordered, like, view of self can realize, okay, even if I have this, and I think we're all, like, hardwired towards, maybe not hardwired, yeah, I mean, like, towards certain defects or struggles. I think we all kind of naturally struggle with different things and succeed at other things more easily just on a, you know, kind of micro and macro level.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just, like, believing, I think so much of any journey of recovery is, like, believing that this thing that was always used for ill, like, can actually be used for good.
Yeah. And, man, there was something I was about to add to that, but since I don't remember, it must not be important. Yeah. And that's the thing about humility.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, no, I do remember. Yay. Okay, great. That, like, Benedict uses the word content.
Yeah.
And, like, that I think a complete reversal of manipulation or control is contentedness.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm not going to try to fix or manipulate or swing this situation to... I was like, I'm content with the way it is. And if it feels menial to me today, okay.
Yeah.
That must be God's will for me today, which is certainly the heart of the steps of humility. And I think really is the heart of the steps of recovery. It's just, this is God's will for me today. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. In this 24 hours, all I have is today. One day at a time and everything. And I can't say I will be humble tomorrow. That's dumb. Because I have no idea what tomorrow's going to be.
Right.
Today I can try to be humble.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And just content.
Yeah. So.
Awesome. Okay, step seven. I like the modern, much more succinct way of putting step seven here, which is have a correct and yet lowly estimation of yourself.
And step seven here is humbly ask him, being God, to remove our shortcomings. And I love this one because it's acknowledging, yeah, there are places where I've fallen short.
Yeah.
Both in my behaviors, in my thoughts, in my feelings, and in humility. And this literally says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And I think, you know, so often in our lives, like, we want God to come in like a raging storm and just, like, take it all away, right? And so often he works slowly, and I love the phrase the long straight road of obedience, like, what I have is today, putting one foot in front of all, you know, any of these things that you're just saying, but this realizing, okay, God, because I can't do this on my own, because I have a properly ordered view of myself, I am asking you to take this away. Understanding that when we ask someone to do it, then we give up the right for how it's going to be done. Which is why sometimes it can be really hard, like, to ask people to do things for us.
Yeah,
or, like,
yeah.
Say you're planning a party and you want to ask someone to do it, and then they maybe don't do it even exactly the way that you would have done it. Or
is this coming? is this sharing anything from recently? That's a side conversation.
We had a big party yesterday for Brother Finbar.
Finbar Fest. Even had themed cups.
It did. And our dear friend Xavier, I asked him to hang up the photo garland, and then he wasn't doing it the way that I wanted. And so then I asked him, but now I've just wasted my time because now I'm... Anyway, he did a great job, Xavier. We love you so much. You used, 40% more tape than I would have, but, like... real life example. But I was what I would have been a better use of my time and mental energy. Not that this was actually like an issue, but would have been to just say, okay, I asked you to do it. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like asking little kids to help you cook in the kitchen. Like, I asked you to do it. And so now I have to, I'm giving up my right to control over how then this situation happens.
That's a really important phrase. Mm-hmm. I give up the right to this, you know? And
as if we ever had a right to it.
Well,
in the first
that's,
place, too.
That's what I mean. Right. 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 And I think that connects so well here with what Benedict says, have a correct and lowly estimation of the self. Mm-hmm. Like, I never had the right to believe I should have these things, right? Mm-hmm. Or I deserve this kind of attention. I deserve this kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. And as far as comparing that with step seven, right? Humbly ask God to
remove our shortcomings.
That's admitting, like, the lowly estimation. Like, that's admitting, this is correct. I have these shortcomings. I have these defects.
Yeah.
And compared to other people, I feel and I seem very lowly, right? And God can still work with that. God can remove the things in the time he wants to. If I am humble enough to truly believe he can and he will.
Yeah.
Like, both of those together were something that I was more recently reflecting on. And just, like, I think it was a talk I was giving at Catholic Fanland, actually, just last week. I was giving a talk to the missionaries about fears that we experience when we're on mission. And I think one of the biggest ones was, like, fear of a loss of some kind of my identity, right? That I will not have the personality or the things that I want people to know about me, they won't, right? Because, oh, if I'm on mission, I'm not doing what I want to do. Or it's like, if it's only about Jesus, which it should always be, I lose me, right? And it's almost like I will be annihilated in order for Jesus to take over, which is so not true. And why connecting that with this is realizing, like, no, not only can God bring out the greatest parts of me through submission to his will, he will do it. Because to believe that God can is only, like, half of it. Believe that God will is where the difference between a God who creates me to the God who also loves me.
Absolutely. And I think this idea of, a lot of times, anyone who's struggling with some sort of addictive behavior, like, we feel like we have a right to it. And especially with defects or with past traumas or whatever is the thing that brought you to the point of engaging in this addictive behavior, you know, there's, I have a right to it. And it's a really a sense of entitlement, which is the opposite direction of humility, for sure, if not, like, the actual opposite of humility. But I think a lot of times anyone who's struggling with, like, problematic sexual behaviors, any sort of alcohol, drug addiction, there's this feeling of, like, there are moments of desperation and a desire to stop. And it's, why won't God just take this away? Or why can't he just take this burden? Or why, you know, I've been trying so long, or I've been working the program for so long, or I've been in recovery for so long, and, like, why isn't this easier? Or why are certain parts of this, you know, still difficult? And because if we were not, if he just took it away, then he would also, one, take away the good things that are kind of interspersed in with any sort of recovery journey, or even what happened, like, pre-recovery. But also would, we would miss out on the journey, on the steps, on the places that are being healed more deeply within us. And I think it's a pretty selfish thing to just, like, expect God to just come in and just take it away, or to make this thing easier. And I, you know, certainly have things in my life where it's like, God, if you can, why don't you just freaking do it? Yeah. Right. And I think there's something to be said for a desperate cry, right? Sure, and there is something to be said for that kind of real poverty of spirit, which is a fruit of humility. But also realizing that, you know, there are, trusting the timing, right? Trusting timing. That long, slow process. And I think anyone who's in a meaningful recovery journey would say, like, I wasn't ready for today until this exact moment. And the grace for the moment's enough in any of those things. And I think that, if God really wanted me to stop, he would just take this away, is an entirely, like, resentment-filled thought, and just breeds more and more resentment.
And it's actually a very prideful thing, too, because, right, your step seven in recovery says, like, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings.
Yeah.
Versus, well, God, if you really cared, you would take it away. I hear that, and I know there are things I've kind of prayed for in that regard, is because I don't really want to. Like, I don't really want to do it. I don't really want to ask. So you would just take it away. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, well, then I'm not responsible.
Right.
To, like, shrink off the responsibility of having to actually overcome this.
Yep. Right.
With this understanding that, oh, without God, I cannot. Right. I can't.
Right.
And without me, God won't. Yeah. He's not going to just impose, like, yep, just going to rip this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
The slow, like, you're talking about rooting out, like, a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just rip the weed out without any plan of what you're going to replace it in there, now you just have a hole that other things are going to fill, right?
Yeah.
It has to have, that's going to slowly pull it. Because also, if you rip weed out completely and there's other good things around it, they all get uprooted too.
Right, exactly.
And now, it's like you do it slowly, humbly, gently, the gentle, that's really being gentle on ourselves in these places too is so important.
Which is really tricky, I think, for people on a recovery journey, because they think, I lost the right to be gentle with myself when I struggled with this behavior. And yet, like, the gentleness is the thing that we're most being invited into. And I think there's a point in everyone's journey where they realize, like, a certain tenderness and gentleness towards oneself, which, again, we much more easily give that to other people, and we're not as quick to give it to ourselves. And Finbar will always has this great line. He'll always say, if I say something that I'm not being gentle with myself, he says, don't talk about my friend like that. Right. And it's just this good reminder for me, like, how am I doing that? The other thing, Cisco, I think, to maybe speak to, like, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, like that honest cry, like, humbly ask him to remove our cross. I think that's what you is another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And yet, if we just remove the cross, one, there won't be a resurrection.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And two, that's the way that we're being sanctified, the way that we're being transformed, the way that the mission of the church and the world is, like, being more fulfilled, or is being fulfilled. Yeah, I think that's just another thing. God, why won't you just take this cross away? Well, if he did, then we would miss out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the resurrection means nothing without the whole passion journey to it. And so we would not rejoice in our own experience of resurrection if we didn't also experience the cross. So yeah, that makes, awesome.
Great. Number eight.
Step eight.
Eight is great.
All right, so the eighth
step. Great and really tough, warning.
Yeah. So at least with humility, so the rule here says the eighth step of humility is that a monk does only what is endorsed by the common rule of the monastery and the example set by his superiors. Another way here, the modern translation, stay within the boundaries of the organization and the roles. So those kind of sound very, I don't know. I'm not sure if I like the modern translation as much there. I do like that he does only what is endorsed by the common rule. And the example set by his superiors. And eight.
Number eight here is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I think the thought that just came to me is acknowledging where we have gone outside of our boundaries.
Wow,
right?
Okay. I was going to say this one was hard for me to reconcile together. Yeah. So I'm glad you thought something.
But realizing that, there are. So, okay, I'm going to read it again because I think it's important. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Which I think is very, like, how much better would most monastic and other communities be if this was actually practiced, right?
Wow.
Not that you've ever struggled with
it. No, I mean, like, we're great with every human person here.
But that realized, okay, so this, we made a list of all the persons we had harmed, which, okay, doing that would not be enough, right? So if we just made a list of the persons we had harmed and then did nothing, fine, and became willing to make amends to them all. And I think what's important here is we can be willing to make amends with someone, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's the just such a crucial thing to remember that we are only, like, responsible for our own capacity, and we can't force that capacity on other people. And so, yeah, I may be willing to make amends to you, but if you're not in a place where you can receive it, it's actually, like, doing a disservice to then try to force it. And again, every person's, 12-step recovery journey, like, you are looking at yourself, right? And this is, it can be really easy to make a list of other people's defects
or to make a list
of the other ways that people have harmed us. But that willingness is, I think, where that humility comes in. And again, I think this is acknowledging there is a rightly ordered way to do everything. Right? Because God gives us order and is a God of order and creation, is ordered all these things. And because of our defects, because of our experiences, because of our addictive behaviors, we have gone outside of that order.
Yeah.
And so what's the restoration of order, which always brings us peace, is living within the bounds of the moral life, of a community life, any of those things.
Yes. Honestly, I think that you did just a really good job covering both there. The only thing I would add is this, I know, like, just speaking from my experience as a monk,
right.
And, you know, having rules set, you know, when I first came to the monastery as a novice, I was very much, I need and must stay within those bounds, right? Mm-hmm. And then, kind of with some complacency, you know, coming in, like, there's a character defect for sure, a willingness to, like, let complete, that, as it happens, kind of a willingness to, sadly, a bad willingness, to kind of like, well, I'll push, you know, I'll push the limits, or I'll push the rules, until they come wider and wider. And now when the boundaries of or what I think is permissible are this wide, now all of this behavior, and all the ways in which I can harm people has also widened. Versus if I'm staying within these boundaries, yes, there are still people, you know, because of my other character defects that I know I have, can also harm. I am at least, in some ways, through the grace of God, limiting
that. Yeah, absolutely. And then are more aware of what your assets are and how those, you know, have good fruit and can counteract and move in, you know, kind of that opposite direction of complacency.
So I know step 9, at least in recovery, definitely connects the two. So we'll go there, too. So for step 9 in humility is to control one's tongue, restraint of speech, and to keep silence. For it is in a, well, the scripture says, is it a flood of words that a man speaks in? So.
And 9 here, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do would injure them or others. And so that's what I meant with the talking about the capacity. And I think we hear injure and we think like physically being injured, right? But I think more just like the emotional internal cost of that too. And just respecting someone else's boundaries enough, like, okay, where are they at? Are they at a place where they can receive this? Or actually, and I think a lot of times on any sort of recovery journey, like, the people we have hurt are often people that have been like involved in the problematic behaviors with the individual, if that makes sense. And so say if someone is in a toxic relationship, if someone's in recovery and they had a previous toxic relationship, it would not be good to go back to that person to make amends.
Like,
you know, I may have hurt this person that I was in a toxic relationship with, but then for me to go back and try to make amends, it's just going to be re-entering into the cycle. And so I think just kind of a carefulness there. And again, that's where the accountability, that's where the transparency makes all these things so much easier. Because we're able to kind of see that with more rightly ordered thing. And I love the number 9 in the rule, because I think there's so much power in staying silent.
Yeah.
There's so much power in staying silent. Especially, or just like not always reacting to things and not always, or if a friend, you know, just needs us to listen and not try to fix it, or just needs us to listen
so
and not,
important.
And not like speak into it and being clear about when we need that, when we don't. You know, I just really need someone to listen here. Like, could you just listen? I think is a crucial thing. And silence can be deafening. And, you know, there's like a line in a song, sometimes silence is violent. Right. And that can be scary. But I think that's acknowledging when's the time to say something and when's the time to not.
The prudence. And that's so, so difficult. Prudence in speech and in, you know, connecting it with the, like you said, making amends, right. Wherever possible.
Yeah. Direct amends.
Direct amends is the silence that we, like, I think is necessary after that amends, right? So if I say, like, I'm sorry for this, and then that's it. Not trying to say, because, you know, in explaining all the ways in which it hurt you, like, they know that. I don't need to tell you why. And I don't need to try to say, and, you know, I was really going through a hard time. Just anything that would justify, rationalize, or add cushion. I know in, like, in confession, I do something like sin sandwiching. Have you ever done that?
Right.
You say, like, one sin that's not so bad, then a bad sin, and then one that's not so bad either, hoping that the priest, like, misses, like, the one in the middle. And it's really just like lead with your weakness, lead with the thing that is most difficult to say, and then just shut up. And let God or let this other person speak into it, or also remain silent too. I tell people that, like, one of the greatest proofs of a good friendship with someone mm-hmm. is the ability for me to just sit in silence in a room with them. Mm-hmm. Because it means that I don't need to prove myself. Mm-hmm. I don't need mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. you know, you don't feel the need to prove yourself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're not always in this need to just make something happen mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. have meaning between mm-hmm. the two of us. Mm-hmm. And that kind of relationship, though, is not possible if a living amends, like absolutely. What we do together,
yep, absolutely.
Isn't always in its openness to, like, hey, if there's been like a rupture to something, like mm-hmm. we need to repair yeah. that.
Rupture repair.
Yeah.
We love
she taught me that
repair.
One. Yeah. And yeah, so that these amends aren't just a one-time things mm-hmm. either, right?
Absolutely.
Like, yes, they probably are over one-time or maybe ongoing things that were definitely problematic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need to make amends with people all the time mm-hmm. and as mm-hmm. quickly right. as we possibly can.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like yeah. that short account. Like, what does it look like? Because, again, these things breed in the darkness. These things breed in the quiet. And so how we do that and how quickly we do that matters. And it, because it's, one, moving in the opposite spirit of resentment and complacency, both which are important. But also it just allows for, I think, yeah, that greater understanding, too.
And, yeah, that's, yeah. The humility of being the one to say it first, especially if you think that it gets double-sided or you just want to blame the other person.
Right.
Like, just to say it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's, again, realizing, like, we're entitled to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
No
and
rights.
Especially in this, and understandably on a recovery journey, like, there's a lot of shame and a lot of frustration and a lot of sin and a lot of, difficult things, like, surrounding all these conversations and behaviors and sometimes it's enough to just say it once and sometimes it needs to be said mm-hmm. like you said mm-hmm. more often, but again realizing like we're not entitled to like self-protection when it comes to actually trying to humbly bring something to someone else or to God
yeah.
or to ourselves.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we're double digits now. Step 10. So step 10 of humility, I just like it succinctly here, to avoid frivolity or foolish talk.
Yeah, and number 10 here, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Exactly what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Continuing to look into ourselves and promptly admitting it. Because, again, say it, done.
Yeah. And I think, you know, frivolity is something that we need to constantly be checking ourselves mm-hmm, for. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, am I saying mm-hmm. this to just get attention from people?
Yeah,
because I want to be the funny guy or the smart person, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or these things that I say are to someone that are harmful that I need to immediately make, you know, mm-hmm. that amends to. Mm-hmm. Is it because of something about me that I'm trying to mm-hmm. reassert my power
sure,
and control
yeah,
in the situation a little bit, you know?
Hide, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so Benedict, you know, saying kind of address it beforehand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then step 12 or step 10 of recovery is kind of if you aren't able to do it beforehand,
you have
to do it on the other side.
Yep. Absolutely.
It is not lost on either end. Mm-hmm. We can always do something about
it. Yes, absolutely. And that is the restoration.
Yeah.
Right? And that is proper order being restored either, before or after it happens. It's not too late. Mm-hmm. To do things even if it's after the fact. Yeah, of course, better to do it before and to try to do it before. But, better late than never, truly.
And in moral theology, there's an understanding, there's conscience, which mm-hmm. really, step 10 just kind of sounds like a daily
absolutely.
Examination of conscience.
Yeah.
Is that there is, premeditative conscience. Mm-hmm. And then there is, I don't know what the exact word is, maybe post-meditative conscience, mm-hmm. whatever. Basically, we have a conscience or, you know, that inner voice that tells us, do or do not do this thing before the action.
Right, right.
And then if we still choose to, there's conscience that says,
after the fact,
you know, you did this was wrong, or you did this was good. Either continue, or you need to step back and resolve, mm-hmm. restore, mm-hmm. ask for forgiveness, whatever, in that place. Mm-hmm. And this kind of seems like those two sides of the conscience mm-hmm. here. Listen to your conscience ahead, mm-hmm. and if you ignore it, mm-hmm. now listen to your conscience in
absolutely.
The end.
Absolutely.
And thanks be to God that He gives us that that fullness
ability
of conscience.
To do it. Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
All right, step 11. All right. To again, I like the succinctness here. Speak clearly and plainly, or a little bit more drawn out, gently and without laughter, serious and reasonably, and with wisdom.
Yeah, number 11 here. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And I love that last part, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. It's what you were just saying, Cisco. Like, we only have today. God's will for us is today. And I'm only worrying about myself. And so much of any struggle with addiction, especially problematic sexual behavior, is a desire to control other people or is a desire to assert power there. And it's a... because then we don't feel as like responsible or blaming ourselves. And again, that's entitlement and that's rationalization and all those things. The will for today through conscious contact with God and to carry that out for the moment.
And I think that just, you know, when we seek that to do God's will and the power to carry it out, it manifests itself in like a a clarity and a gentleness of speech. It's God's will if I'm doing this podcast right now and like there's a lot more talking. It is also God's will probably an hour from now for me not to say anything for a while. And or to, when to speak, you have to avoid the, just the unnecessary, like, you know, let me prove something here.
Absolutely.
And if it is the... both to know God's will and the power to carry it out, wisdom, right? The many episodes ago, we had my good buddy Nick Dewar on. We were talking about poverty of spirit, and he was talking about the serenity prayer, which I know is very central to recovery. Yeah. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah. And Benedict is really saying, like, a wise man, so one who therefore knows the will of God and is seeking to carry it out, speaks with few words. It doesn't require a bunch of things. It requires a willingness.
Yeah, and I think it's easier to listen to someone when they haven't just been talking for no reason, except, like, it's those words, you know, someone who's naturally more hesitant to speak, like, in a good, humble way, then their words are going to hold a lot more weight.
Yeah.
I think that's a good reminder. And I think the what this really is, I think... maybe more than, well, I don't know if I'd want to rank it, but I think this step 11 shows so much humility. Like, because you're only praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Like, giving up our permission to, with other people, other things that are consuming us, and only, you know, through conscious contact with God in this moment and seeking just that out.
And I really, that's... saying that step is prayer, like making prayer central.
Absolutely.
And prayer is such a posture of humility.
Yeah, it's impossible to be humble without prayer.
And if, and there are ways to pray, you know, very pridefully though, right? You know, lacking a lot of humility. If what I'm saying is, oh, you know, God, like, this seems to be exactly what I need. You know, please give me this. This is a list of things versus what Jesus says in the garden, you know, both advocating for ourselves and saying the things that we need, right? If it be your will, let this cup pass. Jesus isn't just saying, hands up, like, you know, Father, you know, whatever. He is saying both what he desires, and then at the end says, and still your will be done. That's humble prayer, is to both say, God, this is what I desire. This is what I believe in my, whether it's lack of wisdom, lack of understanding, or as best as I think I do know, I think this is your will. Would you grant it to me? And yet, ultimately, your will be done.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that is true humility.
Yeah. And then...
thy will, not my will.
And that's exactly what Benedict's saying. And that's coming near the end of these 12 steps, is that, oh, whether it prayer, and then humble, authentic prayer really leads to a lack of necessity in the to like speak and dominate in situations, right?
Yeah, and I think, and it says, and the power to carry that out. So I think it's, we, step one, admit that we're powerless. And then step 11, we are not our own power, but receiving God's power to carry it out.
Such a great bookend.
Yeah.
Well, step 12. All right. So step 12, monk always manifests humility in his bearing. no less than in his heart. Mm-hmm. And just the modern translation, adopt a humble posture. Mm-hmm. And then Benedict finishes here and saying, so that after ascending all of these steps, the monk will quickly arrive at that perfect love of God, mm-hmm. which casts out fear.
And step 12 here, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry out the message to alcoholics or whoever, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So again, it's realizing that these 12 steps are not just important for, you know, the 12 steps here, 12 steps there, are not just important for the thing that we're doing now or the thing that we're struggling with, but for giving it to other people, but then also just engaging in day-to-day life.
And to go back to the steps of, you know, humbly submitting mm-hmm. to God, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Submission. Mm-hmm. That's what 12 becomes, yeah. both for humility and for recovery, mm-hmm. is to now actually mm-hmm. be living God's mission mm-hmm. and not my mm-hmm. own anymore. Absolutely. To take this to other people.
Right.
This is my growth in humility, my growth mm-hmm. in humility. Someone in recovery, that's their recovery journey. It is also not just meant for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We first must work on ourselves if we're to give ourselves. Absolutely. We must first know, Absolutely. Accept, love ourselves before we can give it. Mm-hmm. And yet, it is never meant to just stay here.
Yeah.
And that's really what Benedict says. He says, we'll quickly arrive at that perfect love of God which casts out fear.
Yeah.
If I'm truly loving, mm-hmm. that love cannot be contained,
Absolutely.
Right? The perfect love of God, what is it? What did it result in? Him coming to us, yes, going yeah. all the way down to our level. So those mm-hmm. who are in the midst of addiction, mm-hmm. our love then brings exactly. us out to their depth as
yeah.
well.
And I think the, you know, people, I think generally in recovery would say that it only becomes real when you share with other people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And when you can, which makes sense, you know, that's very true of exactly what you just said about Benedict too. But it's, this thing becomes real because it's no longer just a concept, right? It's no longer just a thing we're doing for ourselves. It's no longer just this, like, weird self-help program. It's something that's actually bearing fruit in the lives of others.
Yeah.
And I think that so much of what is lost and what we're stripped of in addiction is then restored in sharing it with others in a properly ordered way.
And you spoke, I think it was on step 5, about sponsorship, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And that's... at least, you know, it could sound like if you hear that aren't familiar, maybe, and you know, you could correct me if I'm wrong on this, that like, oh, they're just like kind of sitting there, like they're helping you, know, right. but they're like somewhat removed.
Yeah.
But rather, like, I mean, they also went through this
right,
themselves,
exactly.
right? They are no different. They're mm-hmm. not above. They're just like mm-hmm. further along, really.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. So that your journey then is helping them in theirs.
Absolutely.
Like you sharing back to them.
Yeah.
And so them working basically their 12th step mm-hmm. for you mm-hmm. is then allowing through you them to work all their other 11 steps continually
Absolutely.
Over again.
Absolutely.
And so that, and then what is it doing for the one who is the sponsee, I guess, you know, the one who's receiving,
mm-hmm. yep.
Is that their love for you mm-hmm. is casting out the fear that probably is the root of why all these things happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then that beautiful cycle of communion mm-hmm. and freedom, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is if we're arriving then at nothing other than the love of Christ.
Yeah, it's a place of total freedom.
Freedom and communion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's the end goal of any 12-step program, of any, you know, the 12-step of humility, is how can I be as free as possible so that others may live more freely? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the whole, I think, the whole point. And I think it's a good way to be reminded, yes, like, my behaviors, the things I've done, you know, the things that I've struggled with, like, it's important for me to take the time to tend to myself well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And to, I think people can get really excited about, you know, either being a sponsor or getting to the 12 step or, you know, just getting through the program. And it's, you know, anyone who's in any sort of meaningful recovery journey would say it's not just about, like, cycling through the program as quickly as you can. And oftentimes when people do that, as you can imagine,
it doesn't end well,
It doesn't end well, right? Or it has a quicker crash. And so realizing, okay, yeah, these things have to happen in their properly ordered time so that you're not sponsoring someone too quickly. So then you're actually causing more damage because you're not at a place where you're able to do that.
Right.
Et cetera, which can make sense, you know, just like it would be, difficult to journey with someone if you have not first at least begun to address yourself. Not to say we have to be perfect to be able to do that, but to have a more rightly ordered understanding of ourselves as well.
And I love that you were saying kind of like then to work like the will of God, mm-hmm. because that the very last line here in chapter 8, mm-hmm. Benedict says, all of this the Lord will, mm-hmm. by the Holy Spirit, graciously manifest in his workmen, mm-hmm. now cleansed of vices and sins. So right, those defects of characters cleansed from them. We can be of service, mm-hmm. work, mm-hmm. take this out by the Spirit. And I think from having gone to Spirit Life, what they call it, actually, mm-hmm. that recovery center that I go every now and then. I'm actually going tomorrow, which I'm pretty excited about. So this is like the timing of this is great. They talk about being in the fellowship of the Spirit, walking in the fellowship of the Spirit, on the road, they call it the road of happy destiny. I just love that phrase, you know. Mm-hmm. And that, it is our time to work, you know.
Yeah.
They say work the steps,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Both those steps and the steps of humility.
Yeah.
So that, and we never really stop working. Benedict says in the rule, right, we're in the school of the Lord's service in the monastery. And my novice master would say, you never graduate from the school until you're buried.
Yeah.
So this is, we never stop this work.
Right.
We just deepen it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's the exact same thing that anyone in meaningful recovery would say. That it's never over, but only as becoming more and more as we give it to others.
Yeah. So, if you receive, give.
Yeah.
And then you will receive more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. And that allows us to enter into like a healthy cycle of giving and receiving, which is again a restoration of what was lost
before. Boom. I love that. What a great, I just got chills at the end. Some Holy Spirit chills. So
I love those.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Absolutely.
This is
what
a gift.
Yeah,
what a gift.
It was awesome.
It's so great to share these things. And also, just to me, when we first like started having this conversation and seeing like, wow, there's so much overlap. And having discussed this again, the things that I thought there was like tension are like, oh, I don't know if that really translates well. Like there's not like that to me. That is just the proof of the Holy Spirit's work in both of these areas.
Yeah.
Because the Spirit is the Spirit of unity and the Spirit of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And these things have led to... Right, and the Spirit is also the Spirit of what? Freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the truth that these things manifest both through Benedict's rule, through Bill, right? He's the one who started AA. Listening to the Spirit, of truth,
absolutely.
And how they come together.
Yeah.
So,
just the Spirit.
So if you have any comments or questions, with the questions for Lauren maybe, questions for me, you know, please drop them below. If you have, you know, maybe you're someone who has been through a recovery program and you can share just some of your encouragement, your strength, your hopes, you know, in, wow, like this is what God has done in this place. Or those are places that are difficult. Or I remember that step, you know.
Absolutely.
Or there's something that spoke to you from Benedict's rule chapter on humility that's like, wow, that's something I know I want to work on. Or, wow, like what it has really meant to actually grow in humility. Not to what I think humility is, but humility actually is. Conversations, right? Connection is the opposite of addiction, right?
Absolutely. So. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you all. I hope you have a wonderful and God-blessed day, and thank you for joining us for All Good in the Brotherhood. I'm Brother Francisco. This is Lauren. Adios.